DW, World in Progress. With Sarah Steffen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sarah Steffen. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, they say. But according to South Korean beauty standards, that usually means plastic surgery and full face makeup at all times. Some say it's high time for change.
특히 미디어 같은 부분에서 되게 어떤 한 가지의 유형으로
The media have defined what beauty means. And many people between 20 and 30 have been brainwashed. And now we're trying to reverse that and redefine beauty.
좀 내려두고자 계속 이런 운동이 진행되고 있는 것 같아요.
In India, midwives could be the answer to reducing maternal mortality. Midwives are a fairly new concept there that health experts have been pushing for years.
We had some young mothers dying on us, and that used to tear me apart. When I began to read on maternal mortality, we realized if only we had professional midwives, this mother would not die.
We also hear from young women in Nigeria who are rebuilding their lives after fleeing from their Boko Haram captors. All that and more right here on DW's World in Progress. March 8th marks International Women's Day. And just to be clear, this quote-unquote women's issue is something that affects all of society. Yes, also men. I'd say probably especially men. Because when it comes to ending discrimination and sexism, it takes men who speak up behind closed doors during these so-called locker room talks and stop lewd comments, for instance. It's about respect and equality. Common sense, one would think, but unfortunately, we're still not there yet. This week, a group of women leaders published an open letter warning that women's rights, read human rights, are being eroded by a rise in global populism. Women's rights activists from 128 nations also launched a public campaign for an international treaty to end violence against women and girls. Violence against women is the most widespread human rights violation on Earth. One in three women are raped, beaten, or assaulted. In Nigeria, for instance, terror group Boko Haram took young girls away from their families and raped them. For years, they were forced to live under their oppressive rule. Some of the lucky ones were able to escape. Udo Schmidt traveled to a remote village in northeastern Nigeria to learn more about how the young women are rebuilding their lives after Boko Haram. His report is presented by Ineke Mules.
18-year-old Hadiza Musa concentrates as she sews a colorful dress. For 2 years, Hadiza was held captive by the Islamist extremist group Boko Haram and forced to marry a fighter.
I first escaped from Gwoza when Boko Haram came. I went to Madagali, but they still found me there. I was forced to get married, and I was taken to the mountains. They said if I refused to get married, they would kill me.
She says she studied at a madrasa, or Islamic school. It was her first time attending school, but she doesn't remember much. She never learned how to write, but she can read a little in the Quran. At the training center set up by NGO Plan International in the village of Gwoza, those without an education or prospects are given hope for the future. They are taught how to sew and sell their products such as shirts or pants at the local market. Not far away from the village center, 19-year-old Fatmata Buba sits in a small room inside an inconspicuous house. She wears a dark brown hijab. It's clear that Fatmata prefers not to be seen at all.
Boko Haram came to Gwoza and forced my parents to hand me over. Then I was taken to the savannah, far away.
The insurgents pointed a rifle at her father's head. He wanted to protect his daughter, but he was killed. This marked the beginning of 4 terrible years for Fatmata. She was also forced to marry a Boko Haram commander and had a child.
I was 15 years old when I was kidnapped and forced to marry. When I was finally able to escape after many years, my child was less than 12 months old.
The people in Gwoza were kind to her when she returned, explains Fatmata. They were not afraid of her, nor were they worried that she was a suicide bomber. Fatmata learned to read and write in Plan International's Women's Safe House. Then she attended the sewing course.
I learned how to sew here, and I got a sewing machine. I sell the things that I make at the market. That's enough for me to live on.
Fatmata has been able to fulfill her dreams, which kept her alive during the years she spent as a captive under Boko Haram.
I was never allowed to leave the house. If I did, I was punished immediately by being beaten. Often I only had old vegetables or bad raw ingredients to eat.
Now, says Fatmata, there's hope in Gwoza. And there's a young man who wants to marry her. He even asked her if she also wanted to get married to him.
Ineke Mules with that report by Udo Schmidt. It's part of a special on Nigeria's Boko Haram threat.
Listen whenever you want. Find World in Progress in DW's Media Centre at dw.com or download the podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud.
Every day, more than 800 women die from preventable causes related to pregnancy and childbirth. Over 80% of all maternal deaths, stillbirth and newborn deaths could be averted by employing midwives, the World Health Organization says. India has now introduced a national training program for midwives in what has been hailed as a game changer for India's maternal health policy. Julia Vadawan went to the southern state of Telangana, where midwives and private clinics have been helping parents and their babies for years. Her report is presented by Natalie Mala.
It's almost midnight in Hyderabad, the capital of the southern Indian state of Telangana. The maternity ward of a government hospital is crammed with dozens of women in labour. Mothers and newborns lie in rows of beds. Female relatives and toddlers occupy the floor in between. The air is humid and sticky. 30-year-old Jismi George attends to a young mother and her newborn. The young woman has problems nursing her child. George helps her put a blanket under the newborn's back, lifting it to reach its mother's breast. Her colleague massages the baby's cheeks to induce feeding.
And here, who is coming to giving birth, they are like illiterate, they are uneducated, they don't know anything. So we can explain and we can support them. And even here, they don't have any attendants inside the labor room. So that if we are there, at least they will feel a little comfortable. They'll feel more confident.
A mother of a four-year-old herself, George is a trained nurse, but she's been working as a midwife in a private hospital for the past 8 years. Once every few weeks, she and her colleagues are sent to help out in a government-run health centre like this one. In the labour ward, four women suffer the pain of last-stage labour. Naked from the waist down, they lie on metal cots, their legs open towards the door. Only a torn green curtain shields them from the gaze of everyone passing by in the waiting room. While doctors and nurses constantly rush in and out to attend to mothers and babies, George's colleague pulls the curtains closed to provide a little privacy. When she first started working here, George was shocked by the conditions.
Because there is no proper care, there is no safety, no support from mothers, attendants, and this woman is alone in the room.
Across the world, midwives play a crucial role in helping women give birth safely. In Europe, up to 75% of births are attended by midwives. In India, this concept is something of a revolution. In December 2018, the Indian government announced plans to introduce a national midwifery training program. At a conference organised by the World Health Organization in New Delhi, it published new guidelines on midwifery with strategies to secure the quality of training and integration into the health system. Only certified nurses will be eligible for the 18-month training program. Five regional training institutions are to be set up across the country in the first phase. So far, it's unclear when exactly the scheme will start and how many midwives will be trained. But it's hoped the new program will not only save lives, but empower women as well. In the southern state of Telangana, this idea has already been implemented, but on a much smaller scale. Some private clinics here have been providing midwifery-led care for several years now. Jismi George and her colleagues were trained at the Fernandez Hospital in Hyderabad, the capital of Telangana. The facility began as a simple two-bed clinic opened by a young couple in 1948. Their daughter, obstetrician Evita Fernandez, took over in 1996 and opened two more hospitals. Under her leadership, the private institution introduced midwifery-led care in 2011 and now looks after mothers and babies from all walks of life. Evita Fernandez learned about the concept of midwifery-led care while spending a year in the UK. In her office, she explains how the hospital became a referral centre for emergency deliveries and why she finally came up with a two-year training program for midwives.
We had some young mothers dying on us, and that used to tear me apart. When I began to read on maternal mortality, we realised if only we had professional midwives, this mother would not die. We realised countries that had reduced their maternal mortality did it because of a strong backbone of midwifery.
In India, 26 million babies are born annually. Almost 600,000 die in the first month of their life, along with nearly 32,000 pregnant or birthing women. To combat maternal mortality, the government introduced a number of policies, including financial incentives for women who opt to give birth in hospitals. Maternal mortality decreased by two-thirds within 30 years. Still today, one in 600 mothers dies in labour, double the target set out in the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. The two main reasons: there's either a lack of skilled health providers or an over-medicalisation of deliveries. According to the World Health Organization, 83% of all maternal and newborn deaths could be averted by midwifery care. Midwives don't only provide basic anti- and postnatal care, they also detect abnormalities in time and execute emergency measures if there's no doctor available. In hospitals, they're often more approachable and supportive than busy medical staff. In many countries, midwives also help enable women to gain control over their bodies and lives by bringing family planning to conservative communities and rural areas. They are less expensive than doctors while providing better maternal care than nurses. For years, Fernandez tried in vain to convince hospitals in the city of Hyderabad to partner up with her on a midwifery training program. Obstetrics and gynaecology, or OBGYN for short, is not considered lucrative enough.
The concept of investing in anything less than a doctor is not appealing because, let's face it, OBGY is not a revenue-generating business. I generate more with cardiac surgeries.
While maternal mortality has been brought down, death is not the only worry for health experts, activists and women. In India, the rate of caesarean sections has doubled in the last 10 years. It now stands at 18.5%, an unwanted side effect of the institutionalisation of birth. The World Health Organization recommends no higher than 10 to 15%. Higher rates do not show any positive effects on reducing maternal mortality. And unless they're necessary for medical reasons, C-sections can actually harm mothers and babies more than a natural delivery. About 2 hours' drive from Hyderabad in the Karimnagar district, the C-section rate in private institutions has reached more than 70%. In government facilities, it's 40%. Gynecologist Manjula Anandala, who works in the Mother and Child Health Centre in Karimnagar, says more and more mothers are requesting C-sections.
They are afraid of pain. Even the parents, the mother's parents also, though they have delivered normally, they will say, my daughter is very weak, she can't take out pain. So normal delivery, they have forgotten.
What she doesn't mention: C-sections bring more revenue to hospitals. They take less than an hour and can cost anything between the equivalent of 100 and 500 euros, depending on the facility. A normal delivery can take several days and cost half that or less. A study based on the National Family Health Survey of India stated that the majority of C-sections, especially in private facilities, did not have any medical justification, which means they were unnecessary. While private hospitals might do it for the money, State-run institutions do it to save time because the number of beds and staff are limited. Parents also have their reasons. Some of them time their baby's birth according to the astrological constellation of the stars. In other places, having a C-section has become a status symbol, something modern that one has to be able to afford. In 2017, the skyrocketing C-section rate in Telangana finally triggered the state government to introduce a midwifery training program. The trainers come from Evita Fernandez, who helped develop the pilot. As the country gears up to introduce midwifery on a national level, experts will be closely monitoring the progress of the state-run program.
When I am training, student period.
Ramya Shree is one of the first 30 nurses who've been trained so far. Before becoming a nurse, the 36-year-old didn't know that babies could be born through the vagina instead of a C-section. As a nurse, Shree worked in the labour ward, where she says she often observed an inherent lack of privacy and abuse. For example, nurses and doctors pinching or hitting women on their shins and scolding them for groaning in pain. Obstetric violence has become a well-known issue, especially in state-run hospitals. Shree says the course not only increased her skills, she also gained more responsibility and now earns more as well, which makes her feel empowered as a woman. Midwifery, she says, has become her mission.
Actually, I'm a feminist. I have to support ladies. So this is the best opportunity.
Other countries in the region have long included midwives in their health systems, like Sri Lanka, which is now a showcase for midwifery-led care. Bangladesh introduced a national curriculum in 2012, although a lack of skilled teachers and the integration of midwives into the health system and in society have been challenging. India could face similar obstacles, especially when it comes to increasing information about the advantages, as well as improving the acceptance of midwives. Many people, including medical doctors, still aren't even aware of midwives as qualified health professionals. The term midwife is currently used interchangeably for any form of care that caters to pregnant women, says Malavarapu Pakasama, who heads the Society of Midwives in India.
I found we had DAIs, that is traditional birth attendants. We had ANMs, auxiliary nurse midwives, who were partly trained, but were doing a lot of the outreach work. They were also doing assisting women in delivery, but their knowledge and skill were to some extent limited. And in hospital, they were the nurses and doctors. So I said, why isn't there a cadre of midwives?
Prakasama adds that compassion, respectful care and privacy have long been lacking in the treatment of women giving birth, the core principles of midwifery-led care. It's this change of philosophy obstetrician Evita Fernandez also had to relearn, that giving birth is a natural process and mostly does not require medical intervention. Introducing midwifery, she says, has lowered the number of epidural anaesthetics and C-sections in the Fernandez hospitals by more than half.
I realised how wrong we were, how poorly trained we were in understanding the actual physiology of birth. Our whole training is to prepare us for potential catastrophes. We just didn't appreciate nature and a woman's ability to birth. We practiced as obstetricians, believing we were needed and no woman could give birth without us.
In recent years, more and more educated Indian women from the middle and upper class have been claiming their rights to a respectful and self-determined birth. In a dimly lit room with wooden floors and bedsheets with a floral design, Ravival Kumar kneels on the edge of the bed, lowering her upper body onto a stack of cushions on the floor. The 28-year-old is 8 months pregnant, but the baby's body is turned with its feet pointing downwards. Her husband holds her ankles, while a midwife makes her repeat the exercise 3 times to naturally induce the baby to turn.
Many hospitals, they don't allow husband inside.
Ravival and her husband are clients of The Sanctum, a midwifery-led maternity centre in Hyderabad. The Sanctum focuses on natural deliveries and care with dignity, something the young couple says they haven't found in many other places. Here, they say, they feel informed and at ease. The Sanctum was opened by Vijaya Krishnan and her husband in 2010. Krishnan researched the issue of maternal care for her PhD and realised how little control women had over their bodies.
One of the biggest takeaways was women didn't even know that they had choices in childbirth. Day after day, you would hear them say, you know, that no, I go in there, I get seen by the doctor, I get prescribed pills, I come out. That's about it.
Reasons, Krishnan says, also lie in the prevailing taboo of the female body, as well as in the discrimination midwifery has always fought against in the health system worldwide as a challenge to the power of doctors.
And typically, birth and anything related to menstruation is considered, what shall we say, a bad or unclean. That was always done by a lower caste woman.
Recognising midwifery as an autonomous profession could help change this perception. As specialised staff, midwives like Jizmi George or Ramya Shri also earn more than nurses, and they're proud of what they do. That an increasing number of educated couples demand better support during a delivery shows that attitudes are changing already, but many young parents still have to fight against traditions. Vijaya Krishnan calls them rebels, as she recounts the case of a young father approaching her after the birth of his first child.
And he came and said it was so amazing for me to watch my wife do it. I never imagined she could do it like this. And he said, I'm sorry about my family, but we had to fight a lot to bring her here. And some of them, it's the first vaginal birth in entire two generations. That's pretty crazy.
That report by Julia Vadawan was presented by Natalie Muller. Research was supported by the European Journalism Centre and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. If you are on Facebook, you might be interested in DW's Facebook page, DW Women, with lots of content about human rights and equality. Just search for DW Women on Facebook. After a short break, we'll hear about K-beauty and the warped beauty standards in South Korea. You've probably heard of K-pop by now, but have you also heard of K-beauty? It's basically a term used to describe South Korean beauty standards, and I think it's fair to say that they're way over the top compared to the rest of the world. South Korea has the highest rate of plastic surgery per capita. An estimated 1 in 3 young women in South Korea have had plastic surgery. It's not uncommon for parents to give their child plastic surgery before sending them off to college. There's a crazy amount of pressure to be perfect at all times, meaning many women never leave the house without a thick layer of makeup. But there's resistance forming in South Korea from women who say they've had enough of this unrealistic and unhealthy beauty craze. Katrin Erdmann reports from Seoul, and her report is presented by Anke Rasper.
It's early morning in Seoul, and as usual, Yin is up a full hour before her boyfriend. So she has time to do her makeup before he wakes up.
Foundation, 그리고 eyeliner, mascara, eyeshadow.
Her skin vanishes beneath a thick layer of cosmetics. She carefully arranges tiny rhinestones beneath her eyes. Perfect styling is important to the 24-year-old.
Without a beautiful face, you won't find a partner.
And to keep him, she waits until her boyfriend is asleep before taking off her makeup each night. The cosmetics industry peddles the promise of the perfect face on every street corner in Seoul. Virtually every second store seems to be dedicated to the beauty business. The South Korean cosmetic market is one of the 10 biggest in the world, and it just keeps growing year on year. Many women have very specific ideas of what makes a face beautiful.
It should be small, with a high nose and eyelids.
누구나 봤을 때 이쁜 그런.
일단 눈이 커요.
Narrow, big eyes, pointed nose, and oval-shaped.
또 갸름한 얼굴, 마른 사람.
19-year-old Yumi doesn't measure up to these ideals. She has a broad moon face and wears braces. She also has a ready, winning smile. Like most South Korean women, she only ventures out of the house with makeup. She welcomes the new movement that's seeing women break out of restrictive notions of beauty under the slogan, take off the corset.
They boost self-confidence by criticizing beauty mania.
And it's not just the younger generation who are happy that the traditional beauty standards for women are finally being shaken up, as this woman in her late 50s confirms.
I think the take off the corset movement is absolutely right. It's really important for people to be natural.
Ryu Dae-han is a member of the Flaming Feminists, who were among the first group to take up the call for Korean women to escape their corsets.
It's mainly an online movement of women in their 20s. The goal is a comeback for the natural woman, without makeup and plastic surgery.
Women should dare to be self-confident. Beauty has many faces, and there are many different perspectives, not just one, the 23-year-old says.
The media have defined what beauty means. And many people between 20 and 30 have been brainwashed. And now we're trying to reverse that and redefine beauty.
The movement is still small, but it's already having an impact. One female TV presenter now wears glasses, something that has long been the preserve of her male colleagues. And some Asian airlines are now allowing their stewardesses to wear their hair short. Meanwhile, the beauty industry has responded by selling the natural look as the new trend, to be achieved, of course, only through the liberal use of makeup. But student and feminist Ryu Dae-han shows there's an easier, more authentic way to do it. She says her male friends accept the look, and far more importantly, she's happy with the changes.
As an activist, you can never be sure you're going to win your battles. But if the movement can wake up young women and change their perspective, that's already a big victory.
Still, not everyone has welcomed her ideas. For instance, Dae-yoon couldn't win one of her former university professors over. In fact, he insulted her for her activism. She eventually decided to move to a women-only college.
Anke Rasper with that report by Katrin Erdmann. And that's our show for this week. For more World in Progress episodes, go to dw.com/worldinprogress. Thanks very much from all of us in the studio, Iliane Gigliarducci, Jürgen Kuhn, and me, Sarah Steffen. Bye for now.